Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasion.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
When I turn on the Morning Rush, I want to hear Ty at his best every single day.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorback.
Ty, fortunately, has saved the world and not yet procreated.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
Following the Kentucky game in Lexington last year, there was a very emotional Rakeem Boyd that walked off the field dejected, emotionally dead, not crying just yet. He waited till he got in the locker room before he did that, because he went for over 100 yards, two touchdowns. If you remember, second play of the game, he goes for 70-plus, and yet they still came up short against a wide receiver in Lynn Bowden and their fourth-string quarterback against the Razorbacks. That's where you were last year as a football program, and it seems like you've been the last couple years. There was also an emotional Rakeem Boyd, I believe, following the Missouri game in Little Rock, where he's walking off the field in tears. And I'm forgetting if it was that exact game, but you could tell this means a lot to him. This guy's not used to losing. Now, he has been a vital part of the bright spot, of the very few bright spots of this football team this last year. But as a senior, he was voted, along with Grant Morgan, Jonathan Marshall, and Felipe Franks, as one of the captains of this year's team. Now, with COVID going on, there's technically another year that these guys could come back. But there's a very good chance that none of them come back, or a few of them come back, of the seniors I just listed. So for these four guys and the other seniors on this roster, how do you want to be remembered at the University of Arkansas? And that's where we'll start this morning here on the Morning Rush. So how do you think this senior class wants to be remembered at Arkansas for all the past? Quite a way to expunge that would be to go out on a high note. We'll see if they can do that in 2020.
I don't know if it's cleaning the table or resetting the table, but probably something along those lines, maybe a little of both, because obviously you need to clean the table, clean the kitchen, and then kind of get things reset. You need to be the bus boys, because that's where this program's at right now. It needs good cleaning, you know, and I think Sam Pittman and this crew are not going to be the one in this year. I'm not expecting a 1998 to happen here, where you start out 8-0 and it's a weird year. I mean, I'm not looking for something along those lines, but I think you need to be remembered, or what you're hoping to be, is this is the group that set the foundation for the greatness that will potentially follow in years to come.
Because you don't want
at least a noticeably improved program
type. You don't want to be part of the class that's the worst in the history of Razorback football, which if they went 0-4 this year, they didn't do what many thought they could do. That's what this is going to end up being, is the worst senior class in the history of Arkansas football statistically. That is something you do not want to be known for. That's something you did not put in all that offseason work, all those up-downs, all those suicides. That's not what you want to be known for if you're a player at the University of Arkansas.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much of this group, you know, in the fans' minds will lay at the players' feet, and how much of it will be at the previous coach's feet, Chad Morris. Probably with the fans, they're going to shift a lot of it to the guy that's now down on the plains. I'm with you that, you know, some of it has to go to the players. They're the ones on the field at some point, but some of this also has to go to leadership, and that's what you're hoping for, is a turnaround here, that you look back in 3 years, 4 years, whenever that time is, and there is a definite, noticeable difference in the program. You say, well, right here's where it began. 2020, that weird year we had. Remember all that pandemic stuff? No, I hadn't forgotten. Hey, that was the year where those seniors on that team got this thing turned around. I think that's what you could best hope to be remembered for.
You pick up your bootstraps and you look at your previous past and you say, we got to put this behind us. And you look at this past, and what I always like to point out as a son of a Baylor fan and a Baylor alum, Matt Rhule goes 1-11 his first year at Baylor. 1-11. It's following Jim Grobe, who's the interim coach. Next year they go 7-6. Following year they get all the way to the Big 12 championship. Now, I don't expect Sam Pittman to get these guys to Atlanta by year number three, but Matt Rhule, who now is the head coach of the Carolina Panthers, former Baylor head coach, is always highly appreciative of that first class that went through all that pain and misery their senior year, going 1-11, but he has repeated over and over and over again, our success, our foundation would not be the same without those guys. So even if this team goes 1-9, 2-8, to me, that is a good starting point, which for what could be a successful Sam Pittman tenure at Arkansas.
You know, and I know we got a text here from the 479 says this needs to be the group that breaks the SEC losing streak, the winless streak. You mentioned even if they go 1-9 or 2-8, we got to remember this is a program that in the last 3 years has won one SEC game. So two SEC wins this year. While that doesn't sound great, and it's hard for us to really recalibrate the fact that you're playing 10 SEC games, we're used to having these non-conference games, and two wins sounds really ugly. I'm not, you know, stumping for a two-win season, but two wins in this year is a different kind of two-win year, and that is bitter words and loser talk kind of mentality. But I'm just saying, from where you've been, winning one in the last, you're 1-23 in the last 3 years. If you won two in this year, that's a pretty noticeable improvement. And it's not your normal 2-10 you've had the last couple of years.
I would say that that's something to be excited about and something to be happy about as a Razorback fan. And yes, you mentioned like the loser mentality aspect of it, but my expectation is that for them to win one SEC game this year. The Missouri game prior to Alabama. So that's the only expectation I have. Any above that is gravy to me. And when you look at this football team, as you mentioned, one win in the last 3 years, I mean, you got to understand where this program is as a program right now and what programs need to get out of dark, dark places is leaders. What you've talked about with the quarterback position is it's not really the coaches that choose the quarterback. Yes, in a sense it is. They're going to have the final say, but it's who the players look up to. It's who the players respect. It's who they say, this is our guy. I want to go to war with him. I want to be in the trenches with him. The same could be said about the captain position. It's not necessarily the coaches that choose the four, but the players are like, hey, this is the leader of this side of football, of this unit, of this particular front. A lot of times it is the quarterback. Felipe Franks is that guy. Grant Morgan's been highly vocal over and over again. Jonathan Marshall on the defensive line. And then we talked about Rakeem Boyd's emotional side, him just wanting to win. Hopefully he will see some light and there will be some tears of joy that come out of his eyes in 2020, because it has been a tough road for him, whether it's injuries, whether it's just playing for an Arkansas football team, being the best player and just not having any help. You hope for him and these other players that they can finally see some light at the end of the tunnel and not have tears of pain, but have tears of joy at a certain point this season.
I know we're going to get into the captain selections a bit more. I do think it's noteworthy that, you know, a player that's only been in your program months, not years, but he's your senior quarterback. He's the person that's supposed to be the leader on the field, has been selected, chosen, however they went about it, as a captain of your team. And I think it'd be telling if Felipe Franks wasn't amongst that group. So I know we'll talk about that more later coming up.
Yep.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house wearing number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Let's bring in Tom Murphy to talk about Georgia, Arkansas, and all things Razorbacks. Tom, what's your gut tell you about the quarterback situation in Athens? Are we going to see DeJuan Mathis roll out there the first drive? Are you thinking JT Daniels is going to be at the starting quarterback position against Arkansas?
Guys, sure want to talk about the Big Ten news and the media surrounding it from yesterday, but my gut tells me that we're going to see both of those quarterbacks in this game, and, I mean, you'd only be doing yourself a disservice if you just tried to roll with one of them, in my opinion. From the things I've heard, DeJuan Mathis has looked fine. I mean, he's a tall kid. He's a dual threat. He's recovered from the cyst that he had on his brain last year, which is very dangerous. And then, you know, JT Daniels, they expect him to get cleared and get ready to play. I think he's somewhat mobile, but he's coming off of a knee. So I'd be surprised if you didn't see a little bit of both these guys.
You asked and you shall receive. Big Ten conversation. Huge news as the Big Ten Conference announced that it will play college football starting the weekend of the 23rd and 24th. A lot of people excited, but Tom, not everyone's excited. I saw a couple people, and this is the headline that frankly just kind of ticked me off. This was from Christine Brennan of USA Today, calling the darkest day in the Big Ten history. And my thoughts to that is like, hey, Larry Nassar, Jerry Sandusky, hold my beer. Like, how can you write a headline like that, that the Big Ten college football coming back is the darkest day in the history of the conference? I mean, you're a journalist, man. How can you write something like that?
Well, I just thought that that sentiment was completely misguided. And there were people in the media who were saddened yesterday, and it's, seems to me the curtain has been pulled, and it's a political deal. And Tim Brando, I just happened to see this before I got on the air with you guys. Tim Brando, I'm not sure when he tweeted it, but I've enjoyed reading Christine Brennan's work over the years. But this is nothing short of liberal propaganda. There were people who did not want the Big Ten to play, all for political reasons. And there's a lot of us who just wanted football for our livelihoods. I mean, what we're uncertain about is the long-term health effects and all that, but it just seems like there's been so few hospitalizations with these guys that, you know, that you just kind of push forward. I mean, that's what we do as Americans, and I don't understand the whole shutdown mentality that some people have had. And Christine Brennan basically exposed herself yesterday as being a propagandist. I mean, to call it the darkest day in Big Ten history is just so short-sighted and wrong. And you're right, the Sandusky affairs and all the Nassars, and there's been multiple
Urban Meyer and Zach Smith. Yeah, an Ohio State team. I mean, I was reading some of the stuff yesterday that came out. It was just embarrassing like you said, Tom. I've enjoyed her work over the years. She's worked at USA Today Sports, and I've enjoyed her articles. But, like, I'm reading that yesterday. It's like, how in one sentence can you undo all the great work you did over the years? And, I mean, you understand this as a guy that's written college football. Sometimes your worst mistake stands out about all the great things you did.
Well, I mean, I don't know to judge her along those lines. But that was just out of wrong head. I mean, in a lot of people, it was, hey, this is a great day. They're going to play football. And she kind of coded it a little bit in how, oh, there's still, you know, health issues involved. But it was more or less, this is a win for Donald Trump. And I don't think she liked that. Pat Forty, on the other hand, my old buddy, invoked religion in his piece. And I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but it was dripping with sarcasm. And to me, it's an insight into the psychology he brings to the equation, and that by invoking all this religion, it's almost like a slap to the Deep South. It's, you know, traditionally a more, you know, religious area of the country. And so he brings in all this, these religious metaphors, and Moses comes down from the mountain after 40 days and thou shalt play football. And it really slapped me the wrong way that he's mad that football is going to be played in the Midwest, and also brought up the politics and what he called pandering to voters. And it just made me ill to read all that. And, you know, a lot of people in this country, that we just want to live our lives as most normal as we can. And having football in the fall, and the medical advice of their doctors seemed to say that there was a less chance of long-term health issues from this. So, just yesterday was a weird, weird day in college sports journalism.
Yeah, I just don't understand from a business standpoint. I mean, you have your opinions. I've got mine. Ty's got his. But I try to leave those at home because I want people on both sides of the aisle listening to the program. You want people on both sides of the aisle reading your columns. And when you come out so strong one way or the other in a section of the media that is already just a fraction of the, you know, we're not entertainment, we're not Hollywood, we're not the news, we're sports. Why would you want to turn off half your audience? I don't understand from the business standpoint why some of these writers make the decisions they're making that are going to alienate potentially half of the people that would read their columns.
Well, that's a good point. And I mean, I can't speak for their opinion writers. And so Christine Brennan gets to voice her opinion.
Sure.
And she gets the call yesterday, the darkest day in Big Ten history when they reinstated football.
And I get to choose not to read anymore, too.
So
what's that?
I get to choose not to read anymore, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and the USA Today has basically made its political philosophy, you know, it's out there. We understand that. And I don't know what SI.com's ownership and what its philosophy is, but these sports journalists have really entered themselves into the realm of politics and kind of laid it out there for us.
All right, so let's talk about the actual football that the Big Ten is proposing to play and planning to play come late October, beginning the 23rd and the 24th. They're trying to get 9 games in, including teams that did make the championship game, as I understand it, playing on championship weekend. That's about revenue. Is this enough of a season, Tom, in comparison to the ACC, the Big 12, and the SEC to hold up to be included in the college football playoff?
Well, I mean, the argument will be if they're able to get in a chunk of that season, a good chunk of it, that if you base, and this is basically about Ohio State, right?
Sure.
The merits of what they've done and who they've defeated and all that leads to their inclusion, then I'm not going to argue against that. However, they set themselves up some really tough standards in terms of percentage of positive tests or guys in quarantine. And that it's going to make it really hard if you drill down into that. It's going to be hard to get all those games in. I do love the idea of that championship weekend matching up all the rest of the conference. That's a brilliant idea, and whether it's for revenue or not, I like the idea of it. And you know, something that might come out of this is there might be a loosening up of the structure of how teams schedule games and things like that. Now, there's a lot of contracts to be revisited when this thing is all said and done. Arkansas, Notre Dame, the Nevada game, and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, when you go through wild, unprecedented times, then wild, unprecedented things happen. And that's what's going to happen with the Big Ten. And it looks like the Pac-12 is talking about trying to come back in the Mountain West, too. This has really gotten weird.
You mentioned the standards. 21-day suspension of the program with a positive test, and then a 5% positivity rate with the teams before that's the threshold of shutting down. Tom, you're talking about, depending on your roster number, 5 or 6 players, and a player being out for 21 days, missing 3, potentially 4 games, depending on when it falls with your schedule and your calendar. those are some tough, rigorous standards that probably don't fall in line with any other league, certainly, and maybe not in line with the science.
Yeah, I don't know about the science part of it, but they do not fall in line with the other football-playing conferences right now, and it's tough. If you miss 3 games out of that schedule, you're almost at the halfway point of the season. They're trying to salvage what they can from it, and I don't know what forces were at work that put all this together, the science, the doctors, and all that, but they've set themselves up a tough standard, and it's hard to imagine that all those teams are going to get in their 8 games. And that's why, let's just say Ohio State plays 6 games or 7 games. Is that enough? The College Football Playoff Selection Committee this year is going to really have its hand full comparing something like that, like, say, a 7-1 Big Ten team against an undefeated Appalachian State or, you know, Louisiana Lafayette with 1 loss. I mean, what do you do? So it's going to be a real fun season. A lot of great arguments will ensue, but I tell you, I much prefer the arguments about who deserves to be included in a playoff than I do the vitriol that has come about due to the decision to play football.
Tom Murphy with us of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Tom, we've talked Big Ten, Pac-12 kind of on the back burner, but it looks like some steam is getting picked up there. What's your gut tell you if the Pac-12 ultimately sides with the rest of the Power 5 and plays college football in 2020?
Man, there's some states out there. I mean, my sister just drove out to L.A. with, you know, you got the fires going on. You've got some cities, I think, that are still almost shut down. And the unrest out there, you know, like in Portland and stuff, I don't even know if it's calmed down. It's just been going on for so long. But there's a lot more challenges to try to play football out there. But it looks like they've started the dialogue. And to me, that's a positive step. And I don't want any of these kids to have any kind of, you know, health concerns moving forward from this. So they've got a tough decision to make. And for them to get on track to play in October, like the Big 12, like the Big 10 is planning, seems like it's a faster track than I can envision, but I don't know all the stuff that's going on the ground out there.
Tom, before we let you go, big game this weekend as the fighting Jerry Joneses take on your Atlanta Falcons. Now, we brought it up earlier that Jerry wasn't too out of the realm, like, oh, we lost game one, we'll see what happens game two. What are your thoughts on the Dallas Cowboys taking on the Atlanta Falcons this weekend?
Well, you got to give the Cowboys credit. They had the lead for a lot of the game. They didn't generate a lot of offense in the second half, but to me, a narrow loss out there in L.A. to the Rams, who are still a quality team, is a little better representative than the way we I think we lost the ball on downs probably three times in that game. There were turnovers. Just looked really sloppy. We looked like one of those teams that didn't prepare well during COVID and rolled out a bad egg on the first game against the Seahawks. But a lot of people do believe the Seahawks are going to be one of the best teams in football. In fact, I think they're favorite over the Patriots this week. And I read something yesterday that's going to be the first time in maybe 60-something regular season games that the Patriots won't be favored.
Wow.
So that tells you a little something about the Seahawks. I think we'll get better, but I'm concerned about the Falcons in a tough division and us just not having enough firepower. So that I think the Cowboys have to be favored.
Well, Tom, we appreciate it always, man. Best of luck to your Atlanta Falcons this weekend, and we will talk about what happened on that game as well as other Razorback stuff as we are 9 days out from Arkansas football. Appreciate it as always, Tom. Have a good weekend.
You bet, guys. We'll talk more Razorbacks next Tuesday, but I had to say a few things about the national scale today. See y'all.
Good stuff as always, Tom.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Mrs. Lana, good morning. What is your take
on good morning.
Grown men wearing
No. Absolutely no. No, no, no.
Why?
They just look ridiculous. It's just bad. It's just so bad. It's like they want to be out there, but they can't be out there, so they wear this jersey and they parade around in it. And it's like, ew, let the little boys wear it. Let the women wear it with booties or jeans and cute, but a grown man in a jersey, just no, no, no.
So you're okay with ladies wearing it, but we like as men, as older gentlemen, men can't wear it. Just want to clarify.
Is there an age cutoff for you? Is it in your 20s? Is it in your teens?
Let's say you're 25.
I'm guessing 44 would be too old.
Yeah, so. Let's say you're 25. 44. Go ahead.
25. You're pushing it. You know, but 44, definitely not. No, 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 no. It's just awful. And then they have jeans on, and then this white dad tennis shoes and everything. It's just bad. So bad.
Oh, my gosh. The New Balances are like that. So, all right, Mrs. Lana, what should, if let's say there's a 25-year-old luscious lock blonde gentleman that's listening to the radio right now, what should he wear to game days in order to impress young co-eds and young ladies at the University of Arkansas?
Well, definitely not the jersey, but, you know, a collared shirt, maybe like a Columbia or something, and cute khakis, that sort of thing, but not, no jersey, no jerseys. I will not let my husband do that. I'm like, no. We used to go to all the Cowboy games and Razorback games, and oh my goodness, I'm like, no, you can never wear a jersey in the parking lot. No, it's bad.
I'm guessing you're out on face paint too then.
Yes.
Right. Oh, man. Tucked in, if you're going to wear the collar shirt, tucked in or no?
Mm-hmm. It depends on the belly size.
Oh, man. That's good. That's a good way to answer. Well, Miss Lana, we appreciate your call this morning. I don't know
strong
if you've
heard. Strong opinion.
Yeah, and appreciate you coming out strong. If anyone else has an opinion on this, it's 877-
Thank you for listening.
377-6963. And we got a bunch of calls and texts
on this particular subject this morning? What's the one you're laughing at, Tom? What are we going to start with?
I think B.E. in Clarksville wanted us to ask her how many pairs of shoes she had in her closet. That seems personal for a lady, you know. How many pairs of shoes? Because there's an answer you'll give publicly, and then there's the answer you'll give privately to your girlfriends because you don't want your husband to actually know how many pairs of shoes or coach purses you might actually own.
I'm trying to think. So, I got a pair of boots, my grandpa's old boots, pair of running shoes.
No one asks how many pairs of shoes you have. No one cares how many shoes you have.
Sandals. Oh. I got like five, I think, around there or something. So, Nick from Greenwood texted in. Tommy says that Miss Lawn is correct on this. Yeah. All right. So I have my assessment. Listen, you wear what you want to wear. That's just me. Like I dress like a. I don't know. I don't even know how to characterize how I dress. I wear Hawaiian shirts. I wear dad sandals. I wear khaki shorts. I just wear what I want to wear. What's your assessment?
How many jerseys have you seen me wear at work or on weekends or any other time?
Not enough.
Zero would be the answer. I think I've worn a jersey once to a game because it was on a clearance rack and it was to a Chiefs game. So, and it was like $5. So I don't have a problem. I think if a grown man's going to do it, you should do it because your kid's got one on. You're trying
matching.
To father son deal.
Okay,
but to each their own. I'm not going to scoff at someone that does.
I'm just happy I'm still off the cutoff range where I can wear a jersey because based on Miss Lana's response,
26 is coming quickly though.
It is coming quickly, December 11th. So
just
we're
around the corner,
really fast, right after football season. Robert and Fayetteville text in as the U of A is trying to promote jerseys. So much for adult jersey sales, as Miss Lawn is trying to get in. And listen, what the U of A and other college football
and Robert sells this. I would love to know what percentage of his business. I would imagine he sells a lot more.
Oh, that's this Robert.
Yeah, okay. I would imagine Robert sells a lot more collared golf shirts and that type of attire than adult game jerseys. Well, but I don't have an issue. If that's what you want to wear, fine.
I'll defend Robert on this, man. I will probably, even though it was basically condemned just a minute ago, I will probably be wearing jerseys for the rest of my life. I am really never that care that much about other people's opinion outside the people that I value close to me. And listen, my parents, my sisters, they like to make fun of my style every once in a while. And it's warranted because I dress like a psychopath. But, I just don't really care, honestly.
You probably should wear the jersey if you look like you belong in the jersey. You know, if you look like me and you don't, like you don't belong in the game jersey. No,
this
you
looks
don't.
Like,
you do not
oh, I
look.
I could definitely fill out a
not
walk,
even a practice squad.
A walk-on, 100%. Mm. Yeah.
You might could go to walk-ons up there in Rogers and eat, but that'd be about as close to walk on as you'd get.
That's fair enough. Bradford and Van Buren texted in. I like this response. It is a case by case basis. I will say one thing. As far as the jerseys go, don't be the DB, and everyone knows what DB stands for, that wears a jersey on top of a collared shirt. Do one, do the other, don't do but
what about the jersey over the hoodie in inclement weather?
I like that. I'm cool with that. Just don't wear the jersey on top of the collared shirt. There's nothing that I despise more at a game day than seeing that.
So,
don't do that. Please don't do that. So, Brendan Spiro texts in. He says, I have a lucky jersey that gets worn every game day, and it ain't game worn, but it's game quality. Listen, some people have their lucky jersey. Or they're lucky nachos, or they're lucky whatever.
The lucky seat. You got to be sitting in the right place.
No.
Miss Maria's texted in. She says, it is okay for a grown man to wear a jersey. I trust her opinion.
Okay. So we got one opinion on one side, and we've only gotten two women chiming in this. Guys have kind of been back and forth. But listen, depending on what you're at
she
the
says
game,
no sweatshirt, though, under the jersey.
And she's not a fan of that.
What if it's cold?
Yeah, that's a good point as well. So that was a signature U of A thing to wear a jersey on top of a sweatshirt when it was cold and stuff. And I still do that to a certain extent. But, I mean, I don't have a problem. Like, some people are just like, oh, my gosh, I cannot believe that 30-something-year-old man is wearing a jersey or whatever. Listen, you do you. Like, I'm not going to criticize you for wearing. Like, are we really going to sit here and criticize someone for wearing Arkansas Razorback stuff? The only thing I'm going to criticize don't wear the jersey over the collared shirt. You look like a DB. Do that.
What if it's an LSU jersey, though? You clearly and quickly deduct how many IQ points when you pass someone in the Walmart aisle with the LSU jersey on. 75, at least 75 IQ points.
Yeah, you just say, go Tigers. And try and get it out or whatever. So
Texas jersey on, that's a 100-point deduction immediately.
It's 100%. So Robert in Fayetteville texted in, it's like game-worn jerseys are more of a collectible. Yeah, like you hang them up on the wall, you put some glass in front of them. So those are pretty cool. Kyle from Prescott, he has different opinions on per-game basis. Basketball, no basketball jerseys.
I'm out on that. Don't need to see your pits.
It's sleeveless. I get that.
And most of us, let's face it, most of us grown dudes don't have the shoulders and the biceps to pull off the basketball jersey.
No, man. I was wearing a sleeveless shirt playing basketball last night. Getting pretty yoked over here.
No.
Just a little bit. No. John from Mountain Home says, what about a polo over a jersey? Please, no. Just do not mix. Do one or the other. I don't care if, there's nothing wrong with wearing a polo and jeans or khakis to a game. There's nothing wrong with wearing a jersey and jeans too, Gabe. Just don't mix. This is not a mix and match. Don't do that. So Justin Van Beer texts in. He says, my dad's still 63 and still wearing jerseys. He changes them mid-game.
Good for him.
Depending on how the game is going. Thank you, Justin. That is a fantastic text when we're talking about that. Kevin and Alma texts in and says, it's truly a lucky jersey if he's been wearing it for 5 years. I guess back to the bread and spiral. Yeah.
When did you buy this jersey? If it was about 2013, I'd burn that thing.
I would too. So I'm not going to read what bread and spiral just texted him. That's pretty good. Let's see. Bradford Van Buren texted in, I can't believe the grown man is wearing an $80 to $100 jersey. Listen, again.
I've wasted $100 on less.
Yeah.
You know.
Easy. So easy. Jason Harrison texts in and says, people criticize the way I dress. I respond, you're lucky that I've even put clothes on. Oh, man. So, let's see. Last one, JW and Guthrie text in, or JW Guthrie text in and says, I wouldn't wear one, but it's okay if a dude wants to. It's not like you're wearing a helmet or a Lone Ranger mask to the game. So, I don't know. By the way, speaking of mask,
would they let you in with a helmet on?
That's a good question.
I don't think they'd let you in with a helmet.
It would count as the face gear.
Would it? Yeah. This is my face covering.
And as we're talking about face coverings, I mentioned this earlier in the week. I was at Aldi doing my shopping on Tuesday. And for whatever reason, Arns is and Ruskin are against Aldi. I love Aldi. Okay. And so we're in there. And I'm not kidding when I tell you this. A man walked out wearing a television as his face covering. He had carved out or whatever an old TV and had it.
Like out of cardboard?
No. It looked like an actual TV. I didn't, he was 20 yards from me walking the other way. So I didn't want to, hey, mister, is that a legit?
Is that a Magnavox? Hey, sir, is that a Magnavox or an RCA?
It literally had the back of a television and the front of a television.
Like old school tube type TV?
Like old school brown and black television.
That seems like it'd be very hard on the neck.
On the neck.
It'd be very heavy. You know, even if you took all the guts out of it.
It was insane.
That's very creative, though. Plus 10 for creativity points.
What did you see a couple months ago?
Welding mask.
Yeah, that's what it was, welding mask.
Had a welding, full-blown, ready to arc weld or whatever you do. TIG weld, whatever it is. They were ready for the bright light.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade with half the sugar and carbs of Mike's Hard.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
Rod on I-40, you going to be making it to any games this upcoming season, man?
I tell you, I'd like to go to a game, but we're talking about politics a while ago, and, when I walk into that stadium, all right, sit down in front of the big screen, I'm not red or blue. I'm Cardinal. I don't want to hear about politics. I don't want anybody making stupid political statements about stuff that probably isn't even true. I just want to watch a game. People at Arrowhead had the right idea. They booed them. I mean, they booed these people for doing that. This is how dare they interrupt my game with their crap. Just play. Play football. Don't think. Just play. That's all we want to see. Be honest.
Raw, what does the E in ESPN stand for? Do you know by chance off the top of your head?
wouldn't be entertainment, would it?
It would be entertainment. It's funny how easy that came to your mind. That's correct. So I understand that. Listen, I don't necessarily agree with your boo take because I thought that was more of a sign of unity of black and white players rather than pushing a political statement. But I'm like you, man. Like when I watch – and it, listen – so right now, what's happening across sports is you have just a movement, obviously, with Black Lives Matter, and it's more of a leftist movement. I think we can all agree with that, whether you're right or left. And I don't know if it would be as flamboyant and people would get as mad if it was still like a right movement but being pushed, or if like there was a bunch of Make America Great or Donald Trump or whatever the case may be. Pull something out of the hat and say it. Because whether you're a Republican, whether you're a Democrat, lean right, lean left, straight down the middle. Like you're saying, Rod, you just turn on sports to watch football, and we appreciate the call this morning. That is the whole concept in this idea and what so many people have talked about. Not just people who think one way politically, but you'll hear people from both sides say the exact same thing, that they just want to watch college football. There is absolutely nothing wrong with pushing what you believe politically when it comes to outside of your business, outside of your craft, whatever. We don't talk politics on this program. There's a reason for that. I don't care if you're right. I don't care if you're left. Tommy's the same way. Phil's the same way. Jenkins, Matty T, Ruskin, Zach. It doesn't matter to us. So like you're saying, Rod, when it comes to when you walk into that stadium, you're wearing the Cardinal. When it comes to when you walk into the stadium, no one cares if you're a Christian, Muslim, Jew. Doesn't matter. Woman, man, kid. It doesn't matter.
It's supposed to be the one thing we can all get behind.
It's a big old Thanksgiving supper.
We all agree that we love this particular team we're rooting for.
It just doesn't make any sense. And when you do something like we're seeing in 2020, it's just going to divide people. That's all it's going to do, and it's going to hurt your business. If you want to look at it from a pure fiscal standpoint, as I mentioned earlier, it's not just one side of the political spectrum that's being hurt by what's happening with TV ratings. Both parties are turning this off because they don't want, even if you agree with the movement, they don't want to. If they wanted to see that, they would turn on CNN, Fox, NBC, whatever. Why do you watch sports?
To escape.
To escape. Why do you watch sports? To be entertained. Mm-hmm. It's almost like the higher-ups, whether it's Jimmy Pitaro at ESPN, whether it's whoever the heck, I know it was a former ESPNer, I can't tell you who one of the big Fox higher-ups is, but it's almost like CBS, whoever. I know that CBS's guy, and I'm blanking on his name, he told Jim Nantz, Tony Romo, all the CBS guys that you're going to report it. You're not going to give your opinion on it. You're just going to say, this is happening, move on. That's what should be happening with all of this. We're talking about, Tom brought it up earlier with Christine Brennan, who I have enjoyed reading her work over the years. What has happened in our society, particularly in journalism, and I was talking to a professor about this, Professor Foley at the University of Arkansas, who is the chair of that department. Political journalism is all but dead, and sports journalism is hanging on by a thread. Because what is happening in today's society is if you're a journalist, you're supposed to be straight down the middle, not voice your opinion, not give your opinion on a subject. But what has happened is, regardless if you're right or left, this is happening, it's not just on the left side of things, it's right side of things too. They're incorporating their beliefs, values, and ideals and putting that and trying to thrust that into journalism. That's not what journalism is. If you want to be a columnist or an opinion piece or a radio host, we'll take you. You're going to be a journalist. If you're going to give yourself the calling card of a journalist, then be a journalist. There's a difference on this. There's a reason that Tom, Bob, all the other journalists, they get front row in the press box. They get to vote for the Heisman Trophy. They get all these different things that we as radio hosts don't get because we're the lesser of whatever. Because you're expected. You're held to a higher standard. When it comes to this, you can't backtrack on all this. And it's embarrassing for journalism itself. I don't qualify as a journalist, so I don't necessarily have to abide by those standards. But if you're going to say you're that, then be that.
Well,
so
there's columnists, and then there's people that do game reporting. And, you know, columnists are going to write opinions. But to have an opinion that yesterday, having a plan to return to games is the worst day in the history of the Big Ten when we went through the history half hour ago with Jerry Sandusky and Nasser and on and on and on and on.
Hold my beer.
That this is now the worst moment? This? That seems very tone deaf to me.
Yeah. Robert Fort Smith wants to jump in on this convo. Robert, you're on the Morning Rush.
Hey guys, there for me. I thought I was listening to Anderson Cooper. I had that same issue where you guys were talking about a week ago and y'all talked about it. But real quick, how do we do a national championship if the Big Ten's going to jump in October? Are we going to let them do their eight games and then the committee gets to pick or how? Because it doesn't seem, yeah. I mean, I know we can't say fair, but that's some jacked up stuff.
As I understand it, listening to Heather Dinich talk about this yesterday, the other conferences got to vote whether or not to accept the Big Ten's season. The conferences have a say in this, but there's no way at this point they're going to say, no, the Big Ten doesn't qualify because they're a game short. That's not going to happen with nine games versus 10 versus 11. So you'll have nine games under your belt, even if you're not in the championship game. So the Big Ten's going to be in. Now, to make the NCAA tournament in basketball yesterday, the committee said 13 games have to be played. What happens, though, if you lose two or three games due to quarantine, due to players being out? There might need to be a minimum number set. Hey, you got to play X number of games to be considered.
Yeah. Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.